Welcome to Nuanced Judaism, coming to you from OU Torah.
All right then, this one's for you, Rivka.
Okay.
Purim.
Purim, yes.
All right, the name Purim, let me think about that for a moment. You could think of significantly more interesting ways of defining or describing the festival. My personal favorite would be the Festival of the Ring. I mean, for obvious...
The Festival of the Ring.
Well, everything...
Oh, because of Ahasuerus's ring.
Correct.
Signet ring.
Indeed. That okay. is what allowed, that ring of power that allowed everything to take place. I mean, everything stemmed from this one giving of the ring. Now, we could call it the Festival of the Ring.
You would love that, wouldn't you?
Granted, I would. But we could. There's also plenty of other expressions of Purim that would come more appropriate. For example, even Pesach. Like, that kind of makes sense. Sukkot. That also kind of makes sense. The name of a festival very much represents what it's doing.
What actually happened.
There but also were... the message, I suppose, that it's trying to give to us.
So, for example, Hippuch, that everything turned around.
Lovely. Why? I mean, I know Purim refers to the lots and the word, but what dense idea has been given over? If you had to justify it to someone, like, okay, why is it not only a good, but the perfect description, the perfect category, the perfect title to this most fun festival.
Especially since you want to call it the Festival of the Ring. I really have to come up with a good answer.
I was going to say, if anything of us goes viral, I'd love for this one to go viral.
Yes. Okay, so to recap your question, Purim seems like an arbitrary name. Imagine an evil genius wanting to destroy a country now, and he's using, I don't know, some kind of computer software to figure out the right day to do it. And then, miraculously, his plan is thwarted. We wouldn't necessarily call it computer program day. That's kind of an arbitrary way to name a day because that was an arbitrary way of him choosing what day to use. The best way to call it would be, you know, Salvation Day or even Haman Day or V'nahapachu Day. Right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because if you the beginning or when why he decided to do it perhaps is more relevant on the specific time, as you just said. Like,
right.
if I use an algorithm to decide when to do it, it's like be bizarre to me to pinpoint the algorithm as being the central focus of where
the
we should
entire,
be.
Also the evil and also the good. It's neither. It's not that this is the why. He did it because he was jealous, Mordechai, whatever. And the how... The miraculous thing came about was with the parties and with Esther, etc. Nothing to do with the when, which is the Purim.
Interesting. So not even the negative and not even the positive. The positive is how we were saved. The negative is why he did it. The Purim is the when, like Tuesday afternoon at 6. Like, okay.
Exactly. However, if you look at the Purim Megillah and you look at Purim in general in our modern day life, I think that the word Purim has something really deep to teach us. And that is that if you look at Purim, if you look at the Megillah, and you read it without the Midrashim and without all your backlog of knowledge, and you just read it, it could really be a political intrigue. You don't even have to see that Haman was the bad guy and Mordechai was the good guy. Because Mordechai, after all, didn't bow down to the vice president. That's pretty bad. So unless you know how to look at it, or unless you choose actively how to look at it, it can be completely random. We're choosing to see the red string going through the whole Megillah, but you really don't have to see it because God's name is not in it at all.
So you're saying it's not forced?
Exactly.
The whole relationship to the Megillah for the Jewish people is one of fundamentally painted by choice.
Yes. And that, I think, is in diametrical opposite to what Haman was trying to do. Haman comes from the nation of Amalek. And we've met Amalek before when they attacked us from behind in the Bible in the desert. And the word that it says is Hasher Karcha Baderech. They happen to be on your track. They happen to be in your path of in the desert, and they attacked you from behind. And the commentators go crazy on the word Asher Karcha and say that their whole ethos was one of Karcha, of happenstance, of nothing has a point to it. Everything is the way I heard a brilliant rabbi talk about it. Just imagine your day is a melody, and you can either play it in staccato, like dit, like sharp notes, each one separate, or like lungato, like every chord, every key playing into the next when you hold down the pedal. What's the difference, would you say, between those two ways of playing a music?
One's a punctuated, like, sort of event, and the other one's a story.
Exactly. So the way Amalek looked at the world is that every event in history is its own thing.
An isolated incident.
It's not meant to be seen in a greater context. It's not meant to be seen as a higher purpose. It doesn't have connections. It just is. You know, scientists nowadays also look, how could the 10 plagues, technically speaking, have happened? Never mind that we say that they all happened in a year. How naturally could it have happened as an isolated incident? And the point of Amalek and the point where we stand so strongly against, forget about genocide against Amalek, that's not the point. The point is, what in us, where do we have to stand against Amalek? Is in the staccato approach to life, to your day, when you were late for the bus and then something else happens and then something else. Is it each isolated incidences or are you part of a story?
So that's a cool concept. You're saying that rather than looking at life as being punctuated events of happenstance, you look at your life as being a narrative, a story. And anytime you look at your life as being a story, you feel you're going somewhere, you're progressing. I mean, the language is metaphorically embedded in narrative. Where Yes. Are you going in life? Are you living up to your, I don't know, potential? This sort of language is always embedded in narratives.
Right. And a narrative has to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. If you know, there is a type of...
What was the name of the rabbi, by the way?
Rabbi Trump.
Okay. I just want to get that
Yaakov Trump, yes. Shout out to him. If you have a disorder where you can no longer form new memories, there is such a thing, you live in a constant now. The problem with that is that you'll never have yesterday inspiring today, preparing for tomorrow. You're never part of a story. You're always today. And that's what Amalek was. Is everything was just now, blah.
Okay, but now you're going to have to sort of translate this onto a story.
Of Purim. So right. If we're choosing to see the story in this political intrigue called Purim, what was Haman doing? He's trying to wipe out the Jews. Okay, very nice. How is he trying to do that? He's trying to smack in our face that no. You're not going to be saved. You're going to be destroyed. But how? Not by some, you know, ideological difference and a different God. No. Happenstance. Purim. Complete randomness. I'm going to pick up these lots. I'm going to draw the lots. I'm going to see the day, and that's going to be your destruction. No how, no when. The randomness is going to destroy you. That's what Amalek was. And then that same day became our salvation. So of course it has to be called Purim, because we're looking at the pores. We're looking at the randomness that is symbolized by the lots, and we're saying, no, we believe the world has a narrative.
Okay, so can I repeat it and then hit back a bit?
Please.
So to like sort of validate the idea, it's cool. I like it. It's got the idea of, was that condescending?
No.
It's a cool idea. The idea that Amalek represents this sort of like punctuated events and everything is happenstance. And the goal of a Jew is to look at the world and history as being a continuous story, a continuous narrative somewhere. And what emphasizes this... I like this word of punctuated events. This idea that life is not connected to a past and isn't going anywhere is a goyral, is lots. Lots is it could be anything, and nothing about life or history has anything to do with what comes about. And that is the one that epitomizes my philosophy, and that is what's going to destroy you. So it's a clash of philosophies almost. Mm-hmm. The philosophy is of happenstance, that it's coincidence, and the philosophy of that no, the world is reactive. There's a story. I'm involved.
Okay, yes.
There is a whole like sort of overarching image that's given to the whole lots is that the reason why he chose this day was because it's supposed to be the death of Moshe. That added lens that's given to it. I'm not sure if that is like being a bit unfair.
No, it's fine. The Medrash says that he chose Adar, first of all, because there was nothing good happening. And second of all, Adar has Moshe's death, and third of all, that the mazel, the sign for Adar, is a fish, and a big fish eats a little fish. Now, the thing with that is that that's all very nice, powerful symbolism. However, they can be flipped upside down as well, because it wasn't just the death day of Moshe, it was his birthday as well. It wasn't just a big fish doesn't just eat a little fish, it gets eaten by an even bigger fish as well, and God is the biggest fish in the pond.
No, that's another good quote.
Yes, God is the biggest fish in the pond. So
my thought was that even he had a narrative, and you're saying
but before or after, you can always give yourself a narrative once you've chosen something.
No, but
the reason he chose Purim was because of the randomness. The reason he chose lots and didn't just say, no, it's going to be that day.
But it's very cool. But I think if we could perhaps put a meta-narrative to it.
Okay.
Even the examples of narrative that the Medrash is putting on it of the death and the mazel and et cetera, et cetera, both those are also dependent on how you look at it. They're also dependent on the narrative you choose to look at. You could.
I would have been a Haman, and I'm trying to choose a day that is the misfortune, I would choose Av. Hello, destruction of the temple. Just add another destruction to that month. Why didn't he? Because he was using lots, and afterwards he chose to see the good in Adar.
Right. In which case, you could also say that once something has happened, we then look at the purpose that's on it. That's kind
according
of
according to
do.
Our meaning. I mean, think about it this way: what makes something meaningful? The amount of connections you have to it. If you eat breakfast and you didn't choose the breakfast, you don't particularly like the breakfast, it's not evoking any memories, this breakfast, whatever, you eat the breakfast. But if this breakfast is the breakfast that you shared with your grandmother before she died, and it's just the way she used to make it, you could be crying over that breakfast. It's so meaningful to you because it has more connections. A ring is just a ring unless that ring is connected to a commitment of, let's say, a marriage, and then that's a very, very important ring. So if you've chosen a narrative, let's say to see Purim is meaningful, or you've chosen the narrative that I'm destroying the Jews and it's going to be Adar because I've pulled lots, then you're going to make that meaningful by adding connections to it. Make sense?
So you're saying Haman did have a narrative to it. He added connections. He's doing exactly what we're doing. We see events happening and we put meaning to them. He had an event happen, like we have events happen, and he put meaning to it.
Kind of, yeah, that's what we do.
So there's no difference between the two of us. We're basically a bunch of Hamans.
No. You have to take Purim. That's the whole point. Purim does not have Hashem's name in it, and you could choose to see it as one thing or as the other thing. However, the fact that we're taking it in one way has to have a reason. We're not just seeing God in it because we choose to believe in a daddy in the sky. We have other points in history.
We might be digging too deep
into this. I think this is good. We have other points in history. We have Sinai. We have creation of the world. We have different other things that then let us strengthen ourselves with choosing to see God in our lives. Think about it this way. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me just maybe add to that. The difference between Haman event happening and him putting meaning to event is that the point of lots and randomness is that it's almost starting afresh. He's ignoring the past and putting meaning to the present. It's like a very existentialist way of looking at the world. The world is presented to us and we impart meaning to it rather than assuming a deeper background of meaning that on top of which we sort of continue it. Haman was, no,
there's no meaning.
Existence precedes essence. The existence comes and then
put the essence into
it. And that's the...
Okay, so hang on. This is a deep point. I wanted to make sure that I understand this. We have our whole philosophy, our whole emunah, why we believe that the Torah is true, etc. Then we come and we look at this Megillah. There is no God in this Megillah, and you could read it a different way as well. We choose to see it as Mordechai doing the good, Haman doing the bad, God protecting us, Haman's bad, Mordechai's good, Esther facilitates, it's a huge miracle, great, let's eat. However, you could see it the other way. Why are we choosing to see it this way? Because we have history behind us, the whole Longato. We see things as a story, and thereby Purim emerging back then makes sense. From Haman's perspective, he cut himself off from that history. He was casting lots, everything was random, Amalek's force was coming out, and then he's putting meaning to Adar according to what he really, what his vendetta says.
Okay, so
another thing is Haman is only seeing meaning where it helps him. The Jews, they saw meaning, which meant they had to fast and do sackcloth.
See, we could go on. That's the problem.
We could go on.
So how would you summarize the answer? Why Purim?
Because we want to show that even in the randomness, the seeming randomness that people want to throw at us,
it's part of a greater story.
It is part of a greater story. And you can choose to see it or not. And the reason why you would choose to see it is because of that story. the previous chapters in that story might prove your faithfulness to believing in the story.
Wow.
Yeah. Even if it means that you have to do teshuva or fast like the Jews did. Yeah, I mean, when Esther said go fast, they could have been like, what do you mean? This is all just politics. Why should we fast? No, they actually did teshuva. So they saw it, but for their own, to work on themselves.
Their own growth.
Their own growth.
All right, guys, thank you so much for listening.
And have a happy Purim.